Will the House come back to order? Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 535 by Rieger, Ringstead, Grunberg, M.W. Miller, Porchot, Thompson, Boucher, Pierce, Pinalberry, Taylor, Hanley, Collins, and M.M. Miller, an act relating to the registration of motor vehicles. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill and recommends as follows and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Navarre, Chairman, signing Dupass, Pierce. Hanley signed Dupass, assuming revision of fiscal note, and having no recommendation, Navarre and Collins, and Kopanen has no recommendation, but he signed amend to require sticker, and Collins signed, Davis signed, bill needs work. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 535, Finance, with a new title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing Dupass, Ringstead, Pershaw, Rieger, Euling, and Binkley. Szymanski signed Dupass with amendments. Having no recommendation, Adams, Duncan, Larson, and Frank. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 535 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections as to adopting the Finance Committee substitute? Hearing no objection, that committee substitute has been adopted. Does the clerk have any amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 535 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Are there any objections as to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 535, financed by the Finance Committee. An act relating to the insurance requirements for obtaining and maintaining motor vehicle registration and the insurance requirements for motor-driven cycles and providing for an effective date.
The bill is before us, third reading and under debate.
Question.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If the body would contrast the Judiciary Committee substitute to the Finance Committee substitute, they'll see that the latter is shorter, and there's a reason for that. And the reason was that the section dealing with an increase in vehicle registration fees has been deleted. It would have raised all fees by a dollar to help cover some of the administrative costs we thought were in the bill. Finance Committee has determined that those administrative costs are unnecessary. However, I think that one of the sources of additional revenue that this state is going to have to look at are motor vehicle registration fees. They are very low and have remained low for a long period of time. And I would hope the next legislative body, the 15th state legislature, would look hard at that issue.
Any further debate? Representative Gold.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Not debate, just a question for the sponsor, if I could. I understand that this will require then that a person show proof of insurance when applying for registration. And if I'm correct, that seems like a very good thing. I was just wondering whether the bill also somewhere that I do not see has repealed those sections that deal with the triggering of an insurance policy for people who get into an accident and that sort of thing. I would understand that an individual who has an accident would be violating the law now if they were in a registered vehicle, but there was language in statutes that specified that that would be when the requirement would come to the notice of the authorities, if you will, and I was just wondering if that had all been cleaned up.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The gentleman from Haines asked a question as to whether this bill would require notification of insurance when you register your vehicle, and that's correct, and I believe that in doing so, it also solves his second problem.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, another change from the finance to the judiciary version is that the judiciary version required insurance companies to notify the state when a person canceled their insurance. That provision was taken out, Mr. Speaker. With it, the bill is unenforceable and has a loophole so large that everybody can get out of it. Therefore, I oppose the legislation.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I did not have an opportunity to vote against the original mandatory liability insurance bill since I was not in the legislature at the time. However, I do have a chance to vote against this bill, and I shall.
Representative Pinney-Albury.
What happens if a person applies for insurance and it takes a few days because the broker, maybe there's a shortage of availability in auto insurance, and the broker can't provide insurance right away? Does that mean that we can't register vehicles until the insurance company gives us a binder?
Representative Rieger.
That's a hypothetical that I find hard to imagine. Generally, when you go in and buy insurance, you get a binder right that minute, and I haven't heard of a shortage of automobile insurance.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, there is an appearance of a possible conflict of interest with some of the clients I have. It's not actual, but it might look that way. So I ask that I be allowed to abstain from voting on the bill.
Hearing objection. Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have no problem with what the sponsor and the bill is trying to do, but I just want for the record to note some problems that my district will be facing if this is passed. Regarding the exemptions, House Bill 535 recognizes the exemptions included in the mandatory insurance laws provided in Alaska Statute 2822-200. And this statute provides for an exemption in either of two cases. No insurance is required if the vehicle is being driven on a highway, vehicular way, and, quote, not connected by a land highway or vehicular way to the land-connected state highway system, or two, the vehicle is being driven on a highway or vehicular way with an average daily traffic volume greater than 499. And let's see, mandatory insurance is required in Naknek, Dillingham, on Alaska, because the traffic count is more than 499. But they are not connected by a land highway or vehicular way to the land-connected state highway system. And I think it's a problem with the way the department interprets it, because under two, regarding the exemption, it seems like they would be exempt. But then if House Bill 35 would require that you show proof of insurance when you register your car, and then people can't get availability of insurance because there's no major policy writers in the area, and the result is difficulty in obtaining reasonably priced insurance. So if you have to show proof of insurance in order to register your car, and then I know that people in my district are having problems getting insurance, then I think that they're going to, somehow people are going to come to me and say that, you know, they're going to have problems registering their car, and that's just the points I wanted to raise. Thanks.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you. Could we have a brief at ease, please?
The House, please stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? Before the at-ease, we had the bill on the board before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, could we stand at ease again, please?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? The bill is before us in third reading and under debate. Is there any further debate? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, a couple people came up to me at ease and said they didn't quite hear what I said. Let me try it again. In your packet, if you'll take a look at the judiciary version of this bill, page 3 of the Judiciary Committee substitute, you'll notice section 5. That section essentially says an insurer, that's an insurance company, shall notify the department within 10 days after a motor vehicle liability policy has been canceled. That provision was placed there by the Judiciary Committee to make sure that a person could not avoid the obligation of this legislation and in fact drive around without liability coverage. The way they could do that is to obtain the binder that was discussed by the members, walk over and get their motor vehicle registration, and cancel the binder the next day. No liability insurance, but they are registered to vote. The only time you find out is when they run into somebody. That's not the intent of this legislation. The only way this legislation will work is if the state is notified when someone cancels their motor vehicle liability coverage. That's the only way that any version of this legislation has ever been proposed to this body, and since that provision is not in the Finance Committee substitute, it presents a huge loophole to the legislation, which will mean that we will fool people into thinking that everybody's driving around with liability insurance when in fact they are not. And therefore, the legislation is a sham, and I'm going to vote against it.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On top of that, I was concerned in my earlier question to the sponsor about the need for somebody to show proof of insurance when they had an accident, and based on the premise, of course, that they will have insurance after they register. That, to my mind, makes the concern of the majority leader all the more pressing if we're going to save people that burden in time and also ensure that everybody is covered. Therefore, I would like to move and ask unanimous consent that we return a second reading for purposes of a specific amendment, Amendment Number 1, which is being distributed and which inserts back in the bill the Section 5 in the Judiciary Committee substitute dealing with the notification of cancellation. And regarding the movement back to second reading, I'd like to ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objections, the question before us is moving back to second reading for the purpose of the amendment. Just a little bit of latitude. Representative Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, I would encourage the body to return to second reading as well to consider this amendment.
Remove objections. Are there objections to going back to second reading? Hearing no objections, we're back to second reading for the purposes of Amendment Number 1. Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Forgive me, shall I wait for the clerk to read the amendment?
The clerk may make reference to it.
Amendment Number 1 by Gall to page 3, line 16, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Gall.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. On your desks or on the desks of each member, you'll find Amendment Number 1, which is a four-line amendment found
Mr.
in the
Speaker.
Judiciary.
Representative Davis, your point of order.
I believe the representative has to move the amendment.
Sometimes person gets up and goes on and then at the end moves it. But, yeah, Representative Gull, you better move the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Then without further ado, I'd like to move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Okay. Are there any objections to Amendment Number 1? I hear objections. Amendment Number 1. Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The amendment, of course, would mean a lot of, I think, anyway, the intent of the amendment would mean that the department would have to keep track of everybody's insurance and whether or not it was current or not. And I don't know, but I assume that there would be some measures taken by the department if the insurance expired or wasn't paid or whatever. And I'm wondering about a fiscal note on a section like this. It seems to me that it could be quite cumbersome for the department, and I'd like to know what the fiscal impact would be on this amendment.
Representative Miller.
I'm not prepared to give an exact answer to that, but if the people who were for the bill absent this language are correct that only a tiny number of people are going to try to cheat, then the fiscal note for adding this is almost zero. So if, you know, and if those people are mistaken, then we definitely need it, even if there is a fiscal note. So I guess the answer is, I think we can assume it's zero for right now. If we have some experience in the next year, we'll know better. But I think right now, the people that proposed the legislation, minus this legislation, took it out because they thought it was going to be such a small number of people that it was going to be inconsequential anyway. So I therefore, the fiscal note should be inconsequential.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, the and I am speaking to the amendment, the matter of mandatory insurance has been before this body a number of times before, and as you'll recall, I think it was 2 years ago, we did pass some legislation. The public reaction to that legislation was one of disappointment when they discovered what that legislation did. They believed that it would protect them from drivers that did not have insurance, and in fact did not do that, and they were very disappointed in the legislature. Some of them suggested that we were pulling the wool over their eyes. Mr. Speaker, without this amendment, I think there will be that same reaction from the public. The public that will expect people to have liability insurance, they will not, unless this amendment is adopted. It does not require the department to search out whether or not people have insurance or have their insurance canceled, as suggested by the member from Fairbanks. It will require the insurance company simply to provide that notification to the department. It doesn't take anything. Enter it into the computer. They have a computerized system which will trigger a letter to the person noticing, giving them notice that their registration is to be canceled because of the cancellation of their insurance. That kind of system is necessary to make sure that there are not people on the highways driving without insurance. Without the amendment, we will again be fooling the public with regard to this action of this body.
Representative Adams.
Thank you. As far as the fiscal note, that with or without this particular amendment, the fiscal impact as far as personnel would stay zero. We would handle this with existing division of motor vehicles. The only thing that you would see is probably about $15,000 to advertise and notify and promote the new registration requirements on this bill would all be required.
Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before I vote on this amendment, I'm just curious what happens once they notify the department that they've canceled the insurance. I have a number of cars myself, and I know a number of people in Fairbanks that only insure their car during the summertime, so they'll be canceling their insurance at the end of the summer, and because that's all they use it for. And so what's going to happen once they give the notice of cancellation? What's the next step that takes? I don't know.
Representative Ringstead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess we can give as much money or as little money as we want to on some of these fiscal notes and what have you, but I don't have a number. I'm curious if anybody else does, but my guess is there's a whole lot of these pieces of equipment out there that the insurance is canceled. Somebody's got to open a whole ton of mail, and if your paperwork looks anything like my paperwork, I wouldn't want to have to stand in line at motor vehicles with a whole bunch of people that are standing in a line that's three times as long as it is now.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Representative Cotton.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think that the representative from Fairbanks on my left here asked a good question, and all it sounds like is that if you go ahead and cancel your insurance immediately after you get it registered, therefore you qualify for registration, then you cancel your insurance, and the insurance company notifies the department that you've canceled, are you breaking the law at that point? You had it while you registered, so that satisfied the law. So what if the state gets that information that you've canceled your insurance? Does anything happen then?
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's not clear what will happen at that point. But the way that I think that this bill can be viewed is that there was a loophole in the original law, which was a tremendous loophole, and essentially it was the one free accident rule, and you did not have to have insurance until you had your accident, which was ludicrous when that was the point at which you needed the insurance. What the original bill attempted to do was to take one step in tightening that up and tried to minimize the amount of administrative overhead or anything else that would accompany that tightening. And in doing so, it required that the driver show the proof of insurance at the time they register their car and get their license plates. Now, it's been pointed out that there is still a loophole remaining. I'm not sure that most of these people are going to go out and get insurance, register their car, then turn around and cancel their insurance. It's clear that right now there are probably one out of four drivers out there without insurance, and at least based on statistics of people who have been in six-point traffic violation. And it would be, you don't know what will happen, but this is an attempt to reduce the number of uninsured motorists. Now, going one step farther and saying that the insurance company will notify the department is a further deterrent. If you know that you are going, that the insurance company will notify the Department of Public Safety, just as, by the way, they notify the bank lien holder, which is automatic under present system, and notify you. There are already two copies. This would require a third copy to go out. It's still not that much additional overhead, but it is an additional deterrent without us trying to become too much of a big brother and actually go out and seek out each driver who has had a cancellation of insurance and go and take their license plate off their car, as, for example, New York State and some other states do. I believe this amendment does make it tighter than the original bill. I don't oppose the amendment. It still is not the ultimate ironclad, fail-safe way to make sure there's never an uninsured motorist on the road, but I think that each one of these steps does move you in the direction of trying to reduce the number of uninsured motorists without trying to create too much of a bureaucratic overhead.
Question, Representative Duncan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. The more I look at this and listen to more paperwork, I think it's going to be. Let me take the example that I have a car and I have it insured with Allstate, and I go in and register it so I have liability insurance, and then 6 months later I can get a better deal from State Farm and I cancel my insurance with Allstate. Allstate's required to notify the Department of Cancellation of the insurance. It seems to me that we're creating a whole lot of paperwork here that's really, I guess I don't understand what happens at that point either. I still may have liability insurance, but the first insurer notifies the department that it's canceled.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that it's going to create a bunch of paperwork. I often buy insurance on a vehicle in the summertime for a truck or whatever to drive into town to get supplies, whatever, maybe 30 days, 90 days. So I buy the insurance. 30 days later, 90 days later, the insurance is canceled. Then what? I mean, the insurance company notifies them, and then what does the state do? They contact me and tell me that I'm not in compliance, you know, and I'm parking the vehicle. I'm not insuring it. I can't. What happens when you sell a vehicle? You sell a vehicle and you cancel the insurance, and you buy another vehicle, and you buy the insurance through another insurance company or whatever. Maybe it's through Ford Motor Company or whatever. And you cancel the insurance with whatever insurance company you're with. But, you know, I just see all this paperwork taking place in the mail, you saying that you don't have insurance, and one insurance company saying that you do have insurance, and I just can see where it create all kinds of paperwork problems.
Representative Miller.
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I don't think we're creating that much paperwork. We're creating a situation where the insurance company writes a letter to the department and says, Mike Miller has canceled his insurance. So I guess what happens is the state writes a letter to me and says, you've canceled your insurance in violation of the law. Your registration is canceled. And if I, on the other hand, have canceled my one insurance and found a better deal someplace else, I drop them a letter or I run out to the registration place or something else and I says, no, I just changed insurance companies. There's no problem. You know, I don't see it that much of a problem. Absent this amendment, though, I do see a real temptation for people to continue to violate the law, violate it even more because they're having to go out of their way to do it. They're actually lying when they sign up and say I've got insurance, and then 3 days later or 4 days later they cancel it. They're really cheating. They're knowingly cheating. Some might say, well, most people won't do that. But as a matter of fact, when you're talking about insurance premiums of the size that we're frequently talking about these days, there is a real temptation to do that. And I think we just ought to eliminate that temptation, and we ought to eliminate that practice. And the insurance
paperwork or whatever we seem to be so worried about is just not all that great. The whole Department of Motor Vehicles revolves around computers and around paperwork, and they seem to do just fine, and it's not all that confusing. I think they can handle this tiny little refinement just fine.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had heard the majority leader raise the question. I thought it was appropriate for the members to vote on it. I guess I didn't expect quite so much information here. But one thing that has come through and I think has got to be stated is in response to the question from the representative from Eagle River. Apparently what happens here is if a person registers the vehicle and they have not had a violation in the last 5 years of 6 points or less, there's no reason why they can't cancel that registration, that insurance. On the other hand, if they have had such a previous violation, then they can't. There does not seem in statute to be anything that would cancel the registration, but merely put the person on notice that he's in violation of the law if he has had those sorts of violations on his record, and then not if he has not. I think the description of the paperwork that was given by the representative from Juneau is correct, and I'm sorry to delay it longer, but I thought the answer should be on the record. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the representative from Fairbanks has asked a legitimate question, what happens. I really haven't heard an answer to that. There's a number of people in the interior where they may only register their vehicle or they get insurance for 6 months because that's all they drive it, and then they park it during the winter. What happens then with this notification? Does the state come back and say, we're revoking the registration on your vehicle? I myself, when I come to Juneau, I have a vehicle here in Juneau. I only insure it for the 6 months that I'm here, but I pay the registration for the entire year. The other 6 months, I park it and do not drive it. What happens then when the state gets this notification of 10 days? Do I get a letter saying that they're going to revoke the license plates? Am I going to get a rebate on that? I doubt not. So I see some problems here, and I really wish that somebody would answer, what happens when this notification comes back to the state? What is the state going to do in action?
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's conjecture what will happen, but what I will conject will happen is that we are going to be reviewing the statistics compared to the statistics that came out this year about how many uninsured motorists are involved in six-point violations and in accidents involving $500 and more of damage. And if the statistics go down because of what is being done in this bill, I doubt that anything will happen after that point. If the statistics still aren't improved at that point, I think the issue will be back before the legislature, and we'll have to take another look as to whether it's worth taking a stronger step in actually requiring some action on the part of the Department of Public Safety. But I think the attempt now is to reduce the statistics which are out there at present.
Question. Representative Taylor.
Yeah, hopefully I might be able to answer the question. Right now we have in place a system that requires any person convicted of 6 point violation or more to prove that he has insurance. This is a standard form that every insurance agent has right in his office. It's called an SR-22 form. That SR-22 form is also required to be filled out by any person convicted of a DWI. And, in fact, our state keeps track of those right now. Those people only get their license back if they have insurance and if the state has received the SR-22 form. If, in fact, that insurance policy is canceled for some reason, that person's driver's license is going to be canceled by the state administratively. They're all set up and they're handling it right now. The particular instances you're talking about, undoubtedly a notification would be sent that your registration is going to be terminated if you do not reinstate insurance. And the lack of insurance is going to require that you do something about it. It's the very same thing that every one of those people that are out there that have had a 6 point violation are doing right now to keep their driver's license. If they change insurance companies, they make certain that they let the state know. And it's a simple process. They go in and get insurance and they say, Mr. Insurance Agent, I need to have you send in this SR-22 thing along with my policy. Would you do that, please? And he does that right on the spot. And as a consequence, it's no big administrative difficulty. It's not a problem that I perceive as far as cancel of registration. And I'm certain that the department can come out with another, let's call it an SR-23 form, that's sitting right there, and it'll go in right automatically along with your insurance coverage. And if you've canceled insurance, then basically what you've got is you've got an unregistered vehicle. And if you drive an unregistered vehicle, that's a violation of law in and of itself, separate and distinct from any crime you may commit while driving that car. All you have to do then is notify the department you've now got coverage on that vehicle again, and your registration should be reinstated. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to vote for the amendment. I think it's a good one.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
29 yeas, 11 nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading. Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I request permission to go back up the calendar to introduction of guests.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, Reason Magazine is a national magazine with a circulation of about 40,000. It's headquartered in Santa Barbara, California. Its slogan is Free Minds and Free Markets. We're privileged to have with us today and tomorrow the assistant editor of Reason Magazine, Mr. Bill Kaufman.
Any further introduction of guests? Representative Hurley?
Yes. Mr. Speaker, in Gallery B today, we have a young woman who graduated from Juneau High School with highest honors. She graduated from college with highest honors and received a full paid scholarship to Columbia University for a doctor's degree in, I think, microbiology. Has since that time obtained a medical doctor's degree, and she was a participant in the WAMI program. And now she is serving a residency in surgery in California. Please help me welcome Lois Kilowich, who will be Alaska's first woman surgeon.
Any further guests for introduction? This brings us back to the item before us on the calendar. Is there any further debate?
Question.
Representative Collins.
Mr. Speaker, although there is none, there appears to be a conflict of interest with regard to this piece of legislation, and I request that I be allowed to abstain from voting on the measure.
Objection. Hearing objection, the representative must vote. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 535, Finance Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
Yeas, 6 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 535, Finance Amended, has passed the House. Representative
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to roll call vote. Consent. Roll call vote for Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 535 as amended by the House be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Representative Schultz, objection?
No.
Okay. Any objections to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Schultz.
Yes, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration on committee substitute for House Bill 535.
Okay. Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on HB 518.
Okay. Notice of reconsideration has been given on House Bill 518. Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Speaker, may we please have a brief debate?
The House, please stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, We had the bill before us, and we passed it, and it was notice of reconsideration. I understand that there's a letter of intent that is to accompany this. Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, I move the letter of intent and ask unanimous consent for its adoption. I have a technical amendment on the letter of intent, line 2, at the end of line 2, Alaska Statute 2822-200, a small a in parentheses and a 1 in parentheses. That's a technical amendment.
Representative Herman, this is in the letter of intent, not to the main corpus of the bill, right?
It's in the letter of intent, and I've given it to the Chief Clerk.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the letter of intent? I hear objection to the letter of intent. Representative Gruenberg?
Yes, just a point of order, Mr. Speaker. I think that technically the representative was asking unanimous consent to insert that amendment to the letter of intent.
Oh, to the, okay. That's, okay. In other words, we're talking about the second letter of intent that has been drafted then.
Mr. Speaker, maybe the Chief Clerk could read it as it is, revised for the technical amendment.
Would the House please stand at a brief at ease while the Majority Leader and Representative Miller check the statutes on that? Would the House come back to order? Before the at ease, Representative Herman moved and asked unanimous consent for the adoption of the letter of intent to the last bill. There were objections. Representative Herman?
Mr. Speaker, I withdraw my letter of intent. I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to withdraw my letter of intent.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the letter of intent motion has been withdrawn. The clerk at this time, would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 579 by Herman, an act relating to financing of fish processors by the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank. The House Special Committee on State Loans has considered House Bill 579 and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 579 Loans with a new title. Recommends as follows and attaches a fiscal note. Report was signed by Sun Chairman, signing Dupass, Sund, and Cotton. Having no recommendation, Fuller and Euling. The Resources Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the Loans Committee substitute and Dupass. The report was signed by Herman, co-chairman, signing Dupass, Herman Wallace, M.W. Miller, Cato, and Sund. Having no recommendation, Thompson, Jenkins, Pierce, and Schultz. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the Loans Committee substitute and do pass. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Zemanski, Duncan, Larson, Porchot, Euling, Frank, Binkley, and Ringstead. Rieger has no recommendation. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Loans Committee substitute for House Bill 579 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the committee substitute loans? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute loans has been adopted. Would the clerk please make reference to amendment number 1 before us?
Amendment number 1 by Martin to page 2, line 1, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment.
Hearing objections, proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, in this day of local hire, when we see that many people throughout the state are looking for jobs, and for a number of reasons, they are not be able to work, especially in the fish processing, timber, the people in our rural areas who most need the jobs, it seems to me that it would be probably better for us to give loans to people who are residents of the state of Alaska. And perhaps it would encourage the ownership of these processing plants and other means of employment. The owners of the particular agencies that are requesting the loans would then be more apt to hire Alaskans. Also, I think it would make better use of our money to encourage Alaskans being involved in owning these facilities that encourage employment of Alaskans.
Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I oppose the amendment. This amendment would go right back to the way it is now, and then there would be no need for the bill. And I need to talk a little bit about the bill here to say what we're saying in the bill, and that is that onshore processors, regardless of ownership, put a lot of money into the Alaska economy, especially in the community where they are located. And if I could speak about onshore fish processors, which I'm familiar with, say for instance in Naknek, money is generated into the state by cost of transportation of fishermen and cannery workers to the area, and then once in the general area, bus transportation and then small air carrier transportation. And then also, since the Bristol Bay Bureau put a dock into the community, what's happened there is some of the processors now take their packs that they have in these big vans, and they put all of the pack onto the Bureau dock, and a lot of money is generated there by storage of those vans, and then by dock fees once they transport the fish out of the area. And there's many more aspects that are beneficial to the state to loan money to out-of-state processors, and I urge defeat of the amendment.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Representative Sund.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to speak in opposition to the amendment in the same light as the prior speaker. CFAB was created because there was a real lack of ability to get money into the fish processing industry many years ago, and we put the bank together, and the state funded and bought some stock in it. And the attempt here, the original attempt, was to force all of the investment by that to be inside of Alaska to residents of Alaskans. And we restricted the bank's investment policy from investing anything other than fishing, timber, or agriculture, which are all of the three of the major high-risk industries we have in the state. And that's caused a few problems there. This is an attempt to recognize that we are wanting jobs. I think the minority leader laid out a good argument for this amendment in terms of local hire, jobs in the area, and that. And it was the analysis made and the purpose of this bill to expand the investment authority of CFAB to be able to invest or to loan money to people who will put on onshore processing plants in the state. And we restricted it to they have to be a majority of the ownership has to be by residents of the United States rather than residents of the state of Alaska. So we restricted it to this country, but recognizing the fact that once they make the investment in Alaska, onshore in Alaska, that the jobs that will be created will have an opportunity for Alaskans to get those jobs. And that's the whole point of this. And I think it helps the investment in the state. It helps get a better base of investment, possibly to the bank, and that's a benefit to all of the people who are investing with CFAB and borrowing money from them. And I would oppose the amendment very strenuously.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The original intent of CFAB, I think, was quite honorable, and a few years ago when we did pass that legislation, I think everyone had in mind that we need to get onshore processing. We need to get Alaskans involved in Alaskans' business. And then eventually, a lot of the Alaskan-owned facilities were sold to major corporations worldwide as well as U.S.-wide. It seems that in many cases, many of these major corporations are used in Alaska as a write-off for losses. And that can be done very easily. And if that's the way the federal laws are, then fine, let it be. But the whole intent was to ensure that Alaskan will help become self-sufficient, to depend on itself and not our neighbors in other states and foreign countries to own what we have and then eventually wipe it off to their benefits. I think it's going to be very detrimental to taking Alaskan monies and loaning it out to U.S. companies and foreign countries with the hope and promise that they would do better within Alaskan. We always think that this is going to be detrimental to it. We all know the history of CFAB and how bad it is, but I don't think this is going to improve it at all. I think that we should Alaskanize our loans, and that's why I ask for encouragement to passage of this amendment.
Representative Penny Albury.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It seems to me that this amendment confuses economics and patriotism, that if we adopt this amendment, we will in fact be allowing citizens of the United States who reside in a foreign country to be eligible for these loans. And what we're really trying to do, I thought the intent of the bill and the intent of the amendment, was to capture the economic prosperity that would come there from for first the state of Alaska and second the United States. So I don't think that the amendment does what the sponsor is proposing and would suggest is that perhaps he amend the amendment to say resident citizens, if that is the bent that the amendment is going for.
Representative Gull, amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess this is as good a time as any. I'm a little disappointed in regards to this particular issue that we lost the language in the original bill that required 50% Alaskan employment if an out-of-state business interest is to get a loan with Alaska money. The amendment, I guess what I'm speaking to here is also a proposal for an amendment to the amendment, because personally, the Loans Committee version disturbs me a bit, because there is nothing in Section 2 that suggests that this shore-based processing will take place in Alaska. I note in the finding section there are references. I also know that that is not binding on Section 2, and I think maybe the mover of the amendment would like to consider the broader implications here as well and look to that aspect. Thank you.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Representative Ewling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am going to vote for this amendment because, knowing a little bit about the past experience of CFAB and the fact that we have lent them something like $32 million, which was dollars that were generated within the state of Alaska, and there is a payment plan for CFAB to pay that money back over the next 15 years. However, they've only paid back about $250,000 out of the total. And I think that considering the fact that we invested the money, the legislature and the people of Alaska, that I really feel like we should, you know, try to maintain this within the state of Alaska. And what this amendment would do would maintain that Alaska residents with the majority ownership in a corporation would be able to apply for these kind of loans.
Any further debate to amendment number one? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Davis. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Penny Albury? From nay to yay. Any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
9 yays, 30 nays.
Amendment number one has failed adoption. Would the clerk at this time please make reference to amendment number two?
Amendment number two by Martin to page 1, lines 12, 16, and 20, and page 2, line 1, and it is on each member's desk.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment as unanimous consent.
Hearing objection. Proceed.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Speaker, we've heard over the past session a lot to do about unemployment, and certainly about the high rate of out-of-state people employed. The fish processing industry has the highest record numerically, if not monetarily speaking, but as individuals out of state, employed, taking jobs from Alaskans. A lot of this has to do, supposedly, by the processors themselves, is that they have union contracts. And perhaps they are in a catch-22 situation that they do not have the choice in which to say who will work on a particular job for processing our natural resources. In this case here, sir, I'm asking for two things be done. First, delete the three sentences that I have, regardless of ownership. Delete it. And secondly, to put citizens of the United States. The reason citizens, sir, is that you can be a resident of the United States, but yet not be a citizen. And we have many people who are in various corporations that are foreign-owned. We have them in Alaska quite a bit, foreign-owned corporation, that have the principal people here who are residents in that term. But citizens is more important, and then they are liable to the state laws as well as the laws of the United States. Mr. Speaker, we do have other interests that other states have proven to increase unemployment, to call enterprise zones or free enterprise zones. So far, 12 states have passed special enterprise zone legislation. The last one was Colorado just last week. They recognized unemployment in 12 rural areas and unemployment in two urban areas. And what they've done with their bond capacity and with their loan availabilities is to give corporations special tax exemption and loans if they will develop in those particular areas where there is the highest unemployment. Now, I think by accepting this amendment, sir, we would also encourage, in this case, the processors to Alaskanize their business, to employ Alaskans, and to also make sure that the monies are best used within Alaska and to make those a profit-making organization rather than continuously use it as a loss of profit when compared to the other divisions that they have in other states or worldwide. When we delete regardless of ownership, we're telling them that we expect a certain amount of ownership at least to be an American corporation and or an Alaskan corporation. And certainly the second part I'm going to emphasize, citizens of the United States. Thank you.
Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in opposition to this amendment. Many years ago, I came in touch and contact with a situation that rather perplexed me. That is, in the United States, we have what we call an Alien Act. When aliens register on January the 1st, which they're all required to do, they are given pretty much the rights of the citizens of the United States. If quite frequently you'll find that aliens have lived here 30 or 40 years and for some reason or other have not gotten their citizenship. However, they live here, they add to the economy, they raise their families here, they spend their money here, and I think that we would be excluding, particularly the fisheries, a large number of people who do work in the fisheries, are aliens, but who have their families here and do live here. Thank you, sir.
Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I have a technical question to the sponsor. I finally understood how this, where the proposed changes to this legislation are, and I was wondering if this is actually worded correctly, but I guess if the chief clerk understands where the deletions are noted, that's all that is required. But I think by reading this, it'd be difficult to figure out where those deletions are, and that's my first question. And if there's no problem as far as the way it's drafted with the clerk, that's fine. My second question, perhaps of you, Mr. Speaker, it would be: aren't these things incongruent? Shouldn't this be amendment be changed to be two amendments? And I forgot how do we do that? Do we just call for a division of the question? Is that
You could ask for a division, but in essence, sometimes we have amendments that are of a series nature. The representative, Representative Martin, preferred to put them both onto amendment number two. Representative Martin?
Mr. Speaker, the gentleman is right that they could ask a division of the question, but I did put them together deliberately to express my concern that ownership is important as well as citizenship. And if I may elaborate with the lady behind me, yes, we do have a lot of ailing in our state here, and I know a lot of them in the Hispanic communities of Anchorage. But as she is correct, they have up to 7 years normally to get their citizenships, and then under certain exemption for various reasons, they can have an extension to that. 30 years is very, very unusual. Nevertheless, the concept is there that they are considered legal aliens of the United States, and they are considered citizens while participating until they get their citizenship, except for certain exemptions of voting and things like that.
Any further debate? I am ready for the question. The question is, shall amendment number two be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Clerk, take the roll.
13 yeas, 25 nays.
Amendment number two has failed adoption. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
Amendment number three by Gall to page 1, line 26. After second word harvester, add located in Alaska. It is being duplicated, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Are there any objections to amendment number three? Hearing no objections, amendment number three has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Loans Committee substitute for House Bill 579 as amended by the House be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing none, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 579, Loans Amended by the House Special Committee on State Loans for an act relating to financing of fish processors and agricultural and timber processors and harvesters by the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank.
Is there any debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Davis.
I just have a question on the findings, and I believe the minority leader mentioned earlier that it says here, regardless of ownership, that these facilities employ a significant resident workforce and contribute substantially to the local economy. I don't have problems with some of the shore-based processors that employ a significant resident workforce, but we have had findings that some of those same processors actually employ a significant resident, non-resident workforce, and I was just wondering why this was placed in the findings.
Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, in the original bill, I had I was concerned about the same thing because I know some of the shore-based processors, even though they put a lot of money into the economy, they don't hire a lot of residents, although some do. So what I had in my original bill was to put at least 50% of the employees of the processor during the calendar year immediately preceding application for the loan were residents of the state, and if during the life of the loan at least 50% of the employees of the processor during each calendar year are residents of the state, and that was unconstitutional, so it was taken out of there. So that is a concern of mine too.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, this bill, as we all realize, would extend the loaning capability of CFAB, the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank. As you may remember, that was set up with a loan of $32 million from the state to CFAB. That loan was, I think, the next year converted into equity, such that the state of Alaska owns by far the majority of stock in CFAB, although it is a special class of stock. Now, last year, or perhaps it was year before last, CFAB did come up with a plan to buy back all of that stock from the state of Alaska by the year 2000. So far, they have only paid back or bought back about $250,000 out of $32 million. They have since changed presidents, and the new president within the last several months has indicated that they cannot stick to that repayment or rebuying plan, and do not think that they can rebuy or buy back any significant portion of the $32 million by the year 2000. Now, in the wake of that bad news, this bill would allow them to go ahead and invest in shore-based processors, among other things. Do you know what has happened with the state's investment in shore-based processors so far? The Alaska Resources Corporation has invested in three that I know of. All three loans have defaulted. There is now an outstanding $16 million, slightly under $16 million, with a 100% default rate, as indicated in the last three reports of the House Research Agency, which looks into loan programs. And I have here a copy of the May 1986 report. For some reason, they don't show 100% default. They only show a 94.5% default. But in any case, it's close to 100, and it has been 100% up until this. The state now owns, for all intents and purposes, three shore-based fish processing plants. Do we want to get into this business further? This has got to be the leading loss business to get into in Alaska. Not only that, but another loan fund, which is related in the sense that it's in the same field, Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund, currently has outstanding loans of $17 million. The default, the delinquent rate is 23%. One quarter of those loans are now delinquent. But the bottom line is that the state now owns three fish processing plants. How many more do we want to own? If it's a bad business, let's stay out of it. If private enterprise will not get into it of its own accord, we shouldn't get into it. Vote against this bill.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 579, loans amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
33 yeas, 6 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 579, loans amended, has passed the House.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to bring up my consideration of committee substitute for House Bill 535 finance today.
Okay. We have a motion before us to bring up reconsideration on the same day. Are you ready for the question? That's why there's...
Speaker, the motion is a motion that requires a two-thirds vote.
That's right, 30 votes. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall reconsideration be brought up on the same day? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Grunberg, the board is open. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Furness? From no to yes. Would the clerk please tally the board?
35 yeas, 4 nays.
The motion for reconsideration the same day has passed. Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 535, Finance amended by the Finance Committee. An act relating to the insurance requirements for obtaining and maintaining motor vehicle registration and the insurance requirements for motor-driven cycles and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 535, Finance, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
30 yeas, 9 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 535, Finance, has passed the House in reconsideration. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to roll call vote on final passage of Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 535, as amended by the House, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the effective date clause?
I'd just like to note the clerk should reflect the amendment that was adopted.
Okay. Are there any objections to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on our calendar? One moment here. Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, I thought I was going to have a day to work on my letter of intent, but if it's in order, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that I'd be allowed to bring up my letter of intent.
Okay, we have a letter of intent in relation with that. Does the clerk have that letter of intent?
It's gone out to the other room.
Okay, Representative Martin.
Point of order, sir. I think it was withdrawn, and then can they bring it up on the same day, the same letter of intent?
Well, the reconsideration came after the or before the letter of intent, so maybe technically we would have a problem, but we are on an understanding body. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, it is entirely in order to have it brought up at this time. I'd like to note to the sponsor of it that a letter of intent can be offered after the bill has left this body. I knew she did want to do some work on that letter of intent, and my only point is that even though we have taken up the reconsideration today, she can bring up the letter of intent tomorrow.
Do you have any problem with that, Representative
Herman? No, I withdraw my motion.
Okay. Would the clerk please read the next item on our calendar?
House Concurrent Resolution Number 61 by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee relating to access to basic health care services for Alaskans. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, it is a concurrent resolution. It's in second and final reading. Representative Hanley.
Mr. Speaker, I believe that I did have an amendment distributed.
Yeah.
I do have an amendment.
Okay, we are still in second reading, so it's appropriate. Would the clerk please make reference to amendment number one?
It's amendment number one by Hanley, and it's to pages 1 and 2, and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
I hear objection.
In the resolution, Mr. Speaker, the resolution talks about House Bill 675. The amendment simply brings the language of the resolution into conformity with House Bill 675, and I believe it has the support of the co-chair of HESS from Fairbanks.
Representative Kopanen.
Yes, the wording changes just make the resolution more pointed. Thank you.
Are objections maintained to amendment number one? No objections to amendment number one. Amendment number one has been adopted. Second and final reading. Any further debate? Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, this is an amendment. This is a resolution, rather. This is a resolution essentially in favor of socialized medicine. I oppose it. I oppose it vigorously. Now, as to details, the fiscal note from the Department of Health and Social Services is illegal. It does not conform with, as I remember, Alaska Statute 2408035, which says that the fiscal note shall apply to this year and the next 5 years. This particular fiscal note has zeros only for the next fiscal year. In addition to which, a position paper from the Department of Health and Social Services includes some language that doesn't make any sense. They say that the accompanying fiscal note reflects no cost for the study based upon use of existing departmental and legislative staff to complete the study. Then in the next paragraph, the department is preparing an application for a $150,000 grant that, if accepted, would provide support for implementation of the study. Now, is this study going to be a zero impact study, or is it going to cost $150,000? Obviously, it's going to cost something. It is ridiculous to have a zero fiscal note for a study which is obviously going to cost something. The only indication we have is that it is in fact, going to cost $150,000. If they do not get the grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the state is going to have to pick up the tab. At this stage of the game, it's problematical as to whether they're going to get the grant. Sooner or later, if they do that, it's going to cost the state $150,000. So therefore, the real fiscal note is $150,000. That, in addition to the withering socialization aspects, socialistic aspects of this resolution, augur that we all vote against it.
Are you ready for the Representative Kopanen?
I just wish to call the member's attention to the word that he used, implementation. There is a difference between a study and an implementation, and the funding is for the implementation, which the resolution doesn't deal with.
Okay, ready, for Representative Martin.
Speaker, if I may, just one point of information. So this is quite similar to a House bill that was referred to earlier, 675, that was also introduced by the same sponsor. And I'm supposing they had at least one committee hearing on the bill. I'm not sure. But as one in this could be considered as pulling a bill out of committee in place of a resolution.
Representative Martin, I don't know if you're asking for a point of order.
Information.
Information. I assume that would not be the case. It's a matter of a statement of opinion that probably would be used by other bodies than ourselves, like the United States Congress or whoever else connected with it. Representative Kopanen.
Word of explanation. Our budget has called for cutting out the catastrophic illness fund. We have cut back on general relief medical, and we were looking for alternatives for dealing with low-income people outside of the federal Medicaid system, which is under pressure too, and also the U.S. Public Health Service in rural areas. And there is a series of states, a number of states, are looking at the provision of a basic kind of health insurance for these citizens, much better than going at it in through the provision of welfare. And when we looked at the legislation, we found that we lacked the data needed. In other words, the numbers of people who would be impacted, what was basic health care. The department has been cut back to 1.5 people in the planning division. We would hope that they would then, the remaining people would focus on this study and that we would be able to get the cooperation of House Research to give us the data so that we could make some meaningful decisions in the that the next legislature can make some meaningful decisions about whether they wish to proceed on this or some other course. The prime need now is real hard data, numbers of people and costs. That's all. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Maru.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In my opinion, we don't need hard data. This is a simple question of whether we want socialized medicine or not. Do we want more socialism in this state or don't we? State health care plans or basic health care services or whatever else you call them just simply don't work. Case in point, the most famous case is Britain. After 50 years of socialized medicine, the United Kingdom is reprivatizing medicine under the leadership of one of the greatest leaders of the Western world, the first woman prime minister of a major Western nation, Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. We should follow her lead and vote against this so that we maintain what vestige of privatized medicine we have in this state.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to thank the majority leader for correcting me. I thought we went second reading. We don't need that for this. I would like to give an overview, sir, on this particular amendment or resolution. It's quite similar to one that we passed in February 1982, the resolution asking for the same questions. Only in that time, what we did was ask the health research agencies to give us report on health costs and care and where weaknesses are. And it came through, actually it was House Bill 41, with a very good overview of the health problems within the state of Alaska
It was done at a very minimal cost, and it's certainly almost updated now, just being 4 years difference. If anything, maybe more people in Alaska, because of our oil revenues and because of the extended programs that we have available in the last 4 years due to oil revenues, we've been able to upgrade this rather than downgrade in the health problems. Also, I'd like to make note, sir, that a study has been done by Vitel, and this was done in 1980 and 1981. It cost us about $200,000 to have this done. The Indian Health Service was involved. The State of Alaska Health Department was involved. Legislative staff was heavily involved. We had an interim committee involved for two interims, and the U.S. Health Department was heavily involved, too. So this updates us to what they perceived to our problems in health coverage for all aspects of our society. And the report goes up to the year 1990. I don't want to give you the briefs of it, but it's a very good report. I was wondering if the chairman or the sponsor of this resolution has even looked into these reports or studied them and evaluated them. It certainly would have helped a lot on the original bill of 675. I asked that question, sir, mainly because it seems like, according to the sponsor, the major reason he's introducing the bill and a resolution is because he heard of such a thing being done in the state of Washington and such a thing being done in the state of Wisconsin. Well, maybe those two states have previewed what Alaska has done for an overview, a complete comprehensive overview of our health insurance problems and ways that people can get health, coverage for inadequate health problems. In this particular case, we're talking about adequate variable standards of health, and I don't know what that means because the individual doesn't explain it either. The another section refers to creative health care financing. Well, I think we took care of that with another bill, making private insurance carriers responsible for taking care of high-risk citizens. And so it just seems to me that the study is absolutely unnecessary. As brought up previously, we were going to borrow or somehow ever convince the Johnson Foundation that we need another $150,000 from them for this study. The report says that the Department of Health would also have to do a preliminary report before they get the foundation monies. So I think we're just repeating ourselves. I don't know what to be accomplished by this, except a lot of interim work. The department is pretty strapped now, I understand, with monies and responsibilities. And I think if we review the reports that we've already done in 1980 and 1982, we have all the answers that this is requesting.
Question. Ready for the question. The question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution 61 amended pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
29 yeas, 10 nays.
House Concurrent Resolution 61 amended has passed the House. We have some final action and some citations before us today. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that all of the citations appearing on today's calendar be approved.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the citations on today's calendar? Hearing no objections, the citations stand approved. This brings us down to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before this body? Representative Cotton, would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we're under unfinished business. Representative Binkley.
Mr. Speaker, could we please revert up the calendar to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a testament to how long we've been here today, this morning I had the pleasure to introduce the morning class of kindergarten class from Capital School of Mrs. Sandra Schroth. And now we have with us the afternoon kindergarten class. Please help me welcome them. Also, if I could, Mr. Speaker, in Gallery B behind me, an old friend of mine who is formerly from Bethel, now lives in Anchorage, is the Vice Chancellor of the Cree Division of the University of Alaska. Please help me welcome Fred Ali.
Any further guests for introduction? This brings us back down to unfinished business. Representative Cotton.
Speaker, I bring up my reconsideration of House Bill 402 at this time.
Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 402, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to absentee voting.
Okay, the bill is before us in third reading. Representative Cotton.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent we return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment which should be on the members' desks.
Are there any objections to the motion to go back to second reading? I hear objections. So latitude to the representative.
First of all, Mr. Speaker, just one note on about the fourth line down where I've got the word election. There are two elections on that line, and I've given the clerk the additional note that it should say special election. So if you take a look at House Bill 402, then in Section 2, there would only be one sentence remaining there, and I'll read it. It would say, the director shall, when the voter notifies the director in writing that the voter expects to be living, working, or traveling outside the United States at the time of the election, prepare the ballot so that it may be sent to the absentee voter 60 days before the date of the election. The amendment would also delete all language on page 2 from line 4 through 27. The purpose is to still allow the so-called submarine ballot. In other words, a person who expected to be underwater for a long period of time could order that ballot early. I'm not even sure if that was where the connotation came from, but I guess not. There must be another joke here I don't know about. What I'd like to try to avoid is having the director send out a ballot that allows a person to vote a party preference. I assume that the absentee ballot would still have a blank space so a person could write in if the election hadn't been certified. But with Alaska being generally a nonpartisan state, I think this would be a mistake to enact a provision that would allow people to vote by party when no name appeared on the ballot. This would still accomplish, I believe, much of the purpose that the sponsor had in mind, but it would take out the provisions for a strictly party vote.
Okay, the motion before us is to move back to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment, that being number one. Any further comment? Representative Martin.
Yes, sir. Mr. Speaker, if you want to really kill the whole intent of the bill, I'd say vote for this amendment. The U.S. Defense Department made it very clear to the state of Alaska and to the state of West Virginia that we are not in compliance with the rights of our American citizens around the world who are being disenfranchised from the right to vote. It had been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court as well as various state courts that they can, and this is probably the most logical way in allowing our citizens to vote when a clear ballot, an unchallenged ballot, has not been able to be presented to them. Now, U.S. Defense Department, you can call the attorney, Mr. Valentine, had made it clear to the state of Alaska they are more than glad to sue us. They're tired of Alaska waiting for almost 32 years to comply to the rights of enfranchising the rights of our military people around the world to vote. If you vote for this amendment, you kill the bill. I can guarantee you they are ready to sue the state of Alaska. I don't want to use that threat, but the point is that we have to do something to make sure our people around the world on the front line of peace defense and defense for America have a right to vote. I wholeheartedly oppose this amendment.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't realize that we were about to be sued if my amendment passed, and I'm still not convinced that that's the case. I mean, I've heard it said, but I haven't seen any evidence, and I certainly don't mean to suggest that the minority leader is anything but sincere in that concern. But I believe that you still give the director, with the language I propose, the opportunity to get that ballot to the voter, be he overseas, a military person, or whatever, in plenty of time. I don't
I don't think there's any question that the only thing the amendment does is remove this business of partisan voting.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to say a good word for partisan voting. As a matter of fact, if a person desires to base his or her vote on that basis, you know, who am I or who are we to tell them that that's a bad basis to base it on? Now, if you're in the ballot box, you don't need to just say Democrat or Republican because you've got the whole list behind you, or in front of you, and behind each of those names it says Democrat, Republican, Democrat, you know, Libertarian, whatever. And it's just easy to make that decision if that's what you want to base that decision on. But, of course, in this case, we have the situation where we have the so-called submarine ballot, and then there's no names there and there's no parties there. So if a person wants to use that as the basis on which he or she makes their decision, they can't do it if this amendment passes. And, I don't think we ought to be telling people that they can't vote on the basis of just the affiliation with a particular party if that's what the voter wants to base it on.
Representative Martin.
Speaker, call the House on the amendment and the bill.
The House has been called on the bill. Is there any further debate on the motion to move back to second reading? Are there, Representative Duncan? Would the House please stand at ease?
Mr. Speaker, I'd lift a call.
Would the House please come back to order? Representative Martin?
Mr. Speaker, I'd lift a call.
Okay, the call has been lifted. We have before us the question of whether or not we should move back to second reading. Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I'd request that the minority leader give us a clarification. He suggested that we were going to be sued if we didn't allow people to vote for a blank spot on the ballot. And then I heard him say we would be sued if we didn't give them ample time to receive the ballot. I'd like him to clarify that, if I could, through the chair, please.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One is exactly related to the other. We do know in the state of Alaska, our primary is in August, and our general election in November. There are other states that have their primary elections in September, and the election, of course, the first Tuesday of November. In these other states, they found out, and it was upheld, that the best way to give that individual a right to vote is perhaps through a blank ballot by party designation if those particular states or that particular district is having a problem in certification of the final candidates. So one is directly related to the others. In order to get out a ballot in time in this state, the department has said it would be necessary and perhaps in law to allow the blank ballot by party designation. And that won't be true in all cases. It may be in certain cases that are being contested.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I hate to belabor this, but I would suggest that there's quite a difference between allowing a state to propose such a ballot and being required or sued by the federal government for not doing it.
If the members of this body would like to hear more on amendment number one, do you know how to vote? Are you ready? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 402 Judiciary be returned to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment? That amendment being number one. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
22 yeas, 15 nays.
The bill is back before us in second reading. Representative Cotton. Hearing objections. Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, for the sake of a lot of members that were not here, the reason why we're objecting, for those that haven't even had a chance to read the amendment, is that the whole page number 2 is being deleted from line 4 down to 27, and a significant part in the middle of line 1 that would do away with the most important part of these ballots that would allow people to vote by party preference if the candidates' names are not available in time. The whole object of this bill is to give our military people a right to vote and not disenfranchise them by delayed ballots.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I think that is one of the key provisions of the bill, and that's what I do object to, and that's why I voted against the bill the other day. I think that when there's a majority of the people in this state that are registered voters, registered nonpartisan, I think that you're leaving them out of this whole equation. I think that with our election taking place in August, there probably is not going to be a problem with a blank spot on the ballot, but in case there is a certification problem, I think it would be unfair to everyone if we proposed that a person should be able to select a person for office based solely on their partisan affiliation.
Representative Boucher to Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I oppose the amendment. There's been a lot of time and effort, and I know that the representative from Eagle River has given a lot of thought to it. I think really in the final analysis, if it is possible for the state to put out a ballot with printed names on it, they are going to do it, but there are times when they are not. And I, for one, even if it was a vote for party preference and they had to send out a blank ballot, I would rather see those servicemen and women have the opportunity to vote, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Me is that we're also eliminating lines 18 through 21. And if members will look, that language says the director shall count the ballots, or the director shall provide the voter with the names of each candidate appearing on the primary ballot and the names of any candidate who have been qualified petition to appear on the general election ballot. Absent this language, I don't think as a matter of course that information will be provided. If they've got the information early enough and they print the ballot then with the names on it, then sure enough, that'll be covered. That'll be fine. But otherwise, I think they're just going to send, absent this language, I think they're just going to send out a card with a blank space, and if you have somehow, by psychic transmission or something else, happen to know the right name to write in, you can write in that name. But otherwise, the director of elections, absent that language, 18 through 21, unless I'm misreading this or unless there's something else in the bill that I've already missed, that information is not going to be available, so that blank line really isn't going to do you a lot of good.
Ready for the question. The question, Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I hadn't intended to rise again, but the previous speaker raised a question that I think warrants some discussion. I don't see that there's a problem. If you order a primary election ballot, the people who have qualified for it, that's who's going to show up on the primary election ballot. I don't think you need this extra language to ensure that.
Representative Miller.
As I understand it, a lot of times when they're printing up these ballots, they're not going to have the information in time to get this new early deadline. So therefore, they'll send out a bunch that are just blank. But at the last minute, just before they put those in the mail, if they have the information, they'll print them up on a Xerox paper. Well, Xerox probably not, but on a on a fast print job, and they'll be able to provide that information. It'll be on a separate piece of paper. It won't be on the ballot. It'll be on a last-minute separate piece of paper. Obviously, if they don't have that information, then they won't send it, and so that does it. But if they do have it, this obligates them to, on a separate piece of paper, send it along. And I think that information could be the difference between somebody